Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com. Free Talk Live.
That you control. 603-283-6160 is the phone number to call in with whatever's on your mind. 603-283-6160. And in the studio with you tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
Vicky.
It's Ian.
And let's go straight to the phones. We have Tom in New Hampshire. Tom, what's on your mind?
Well, it's about collectivism versus defense. Now, I was a victim of collectivism. I know what that's like. It was an unforgivable hate crime. On 24 May 1979, Governor Hugh Gallon signed a bill raising the drinking age in New Hampshire to 20. I was 19 at the time. And I see the issue was that some of these people who were 18 and 19 years old, who were drinking lawfully, some of them would then go out and drive, and therefore, instead of punishing the ones that commit the crimes, they would go out and commit this unforgivable attack on the fundamental rights and basic human dignity of everybody who's 18 or 19, even if they've never driven drunk or any of that stuff, because they don't, and it was a wake-up call for me in many ways, because I realized that the country really is overrun with deranged, degenerate punks who don't give a fire truck about somebody else's rights. Because no matter how well you can express the flaws in their lines of reasoning and prove that this is a blatantly unjust law, they don't care.
Nope, they don't care. It's for the children.
Now, the other part of this is, now getting on to defense, after the Battle of Palmdale, where that deputy got killed on September the 16th, I built a web page, the Deputy Ryan Klinkenbrumer Memorial page, and I explain exactly why Ian and Bonnie are totally wrong about where to draw the line between collectivism and defense, because the cops all are an organized force. They all signed up to go on a mission to commit violations of the non-aggression principle. And when you say violations of the non-aggression principle, a simple name for that is aggression. They all signed up to commit unprovoked acts of aggression against innocent people. And therefore, just like the Battle of Concord, where the British soldiers were advancing and people just started gunning down as many as they could, and the Battle of Bunker Hill on...
Well, hold on. I'm pausing you there because I want to be able to respond. I'm putting you on hold because if I talk, then you hear me in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of turning it up and down every single time someone's talking. It's too hard. I'm putting you on hold because I want to say, just because I agree that every single cop is signing up to commit acts of aggression against people. But the thing is, forcing you to pay a $50 fine, I don't think that is answerable with, like, killing someone. That's why.
And that's
it's
what
not,
he's referring to. He's talking about a cop
that got shot in
was
the street,
shot at just sitting in his car.
At a red light, yeah. So what do you think about that, Tom?
Well, it's not the end of the world if you get a mosquito bite and you still kill the mosquito, don't you?
Humans aren't mosquitoes. Thanks for the call. I mean,
yeah,
that's just
terrible
logic. I mean, he can't answer my simple question without calling killing a human being the same thing as killing a mosquito. Stupid.
Yeah. I get, like, not really having respect for cops, but
right,
it is still, like, to me, if I were to just go and, like, kill a random cop, that's not self-defense, because they didn't actually aggress on me to begin with. Like,
well, he would say they're always aggressing.
Yeah, just their existence, right, just because they're cops.
They're a constant threat.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
I could agree that they, as soon as they signed up, they were committing an act of, not committing an act of aggression, but they're signing up to go commit active aggressions, and most things they do are active aggressions. But I don't think that most things that they do are answerable, like, you, for you to retaliate with killing them. Like, what most of the things that cops do to you in your day, in your life, is not, like, you shouldn't kill them in response, or anyone doing those same things.
Yeah, this is something that certain hosts of this show in the past have kind of come similarly advocated, I guess. They get all excited if they hear about a cop getting killed, and those hosts currently aren't on the air on this program, but this is not an uncommon belief system among some libertarians. However, and you may be able to say that, well, okay, well, what if the cop was pulling you over at the time? Then do you have a right to, because then they're using force against you. They are threatening to
hurt
you.
Yeah, but, like, writing a ticket, like, if I'm getting a speeding ticket, I'm not like, oh, like, better, you know. Yeah, like, to me, it's not, like you said earlier, Bonnie, like, it's not equal, you know? Like, writing me a ticket, it doesn't warrant death.
But to pull you over in the first place, they have to threaten you with violence in order to get you. Because if you don't pull over, they're going to run you off the road.
Yeah, of course.
Possibly shoot you or shoot your tires out.
But to me,
like,
that's still not equal to, like, warrant.
It's never equal because they have the legitimacy to get away with these things.
Yeah.
So, like, even in circumstances where, like, we had cops bombing our home. And you just didn't have to be here at the time.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
They literally threw an explosive device outside of our bedroom window in 2021. They ran a bearcat into the other side of the home.
Well, I wasn't
they
gonna get
smashed
into that.
Smashed in two windows, and still we did not respond with violence. We remained peaceful.
It's not a good idea.
Well, right. Not because you couldn't justify it. Like, as you can see, Tom is justifying it based on their simple existence, but because it's simply not a good strategy. This is what these people are looking for. And that's why people like Tom, and I don't think it's true about Tom, but people who say things like what Tom says are in many cases actually cops that are working undercover to try to gin up conflict, to try to gin up violence, to get people to behave violently because they want the excuse to crack down even harder.
Oh, you're cool. Anti-government meme pages you follow that talk about how great Ted Kaczynski is.
Yeah, sure. That's what, the bomber,
cops.
From Oklahoma City, I think. No, I don't think, was he the Unabomber?
I mean, yeah, isn't that the Unabomber?
I thought he was Oklahoma City.
No, he's not Oklahoma City. He was the one that mailed bombs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Who was the Oklahoma City guy?
I don't
remember.
Well, anyway,
I was about to take that angle. I was about to say, oh, yeah, most of the cop interactions in my life were not answerable with, killing them. And then I was like, maybe I shouldn't talk about that because I forgot about some. But I'm not saying that it would ever be a good idea or something I would personally choose to do.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, it's just, they have more people with guns than them, and they have a bunch of people that think that it's never okay to, they have all these, like, normies that live around you that are your neighbors and people you work with who will just think it's never okay to defend yourself against the cops because they're the cops. Whether you, not just killing them, but, like, even just refusing to pay tickets, you have people that you see every single day who just think it's not okay. You should just do what they tell you.
The people on the jury in my case seem to think it was totally okay for the cops to do what they did to us, and we were completely peaceful, and they still thought the cops, even though they were obviously ridiculously violent in what they did with us here, but it didn't seem to matter to the jury because people believe that the police have legitimacy.
Yeah.
Even if they've seen the police doing things that they shouldn't do, even if they've seen stories about George Floyd or, you know, whatever other corruption that they've seen with the police, they still tell themselves.
Well, New Hampshire. I mean, it's like they didn't care when the prosecution brought up that you accused a black man of not being possibly able to be a CEO of a business. Like, we don't really know what these people that we don't know think.
Yeah, we don't. But what we know is that no matter how violent the police have gotten, no matter how insane they behaved, people still believe that it's just a few bad apples and that, well, we can just elect our way out of the problem and minor reforms will solve the issues. People in the United States have not had enough of the police violence. They have not had enough of police corruption. And I don't know when they'll have enough, but we're not there yet, unfortunately. And again, I'm not saying that there's a circumstance where violence is justified. I think we need to stay peaceful. I think that if we are to be advocating for peace, and that's what we advocate on this show, then using retaliatory violence or, quote, oh, well, they're already, aggressing, so it's not retaliatory. This is all just an excuse to get violent. And that is what those people want you to do. That's why they have the Bearcats. That's why they have the armor. That's why they have the sniper rifles. They have the drones. They have the budget. They have the millions of billions of dollars, and they're ready to
use
it.
And they have the support of the average person.
Yeah, and they don't know what to do when it comes to someone who, or a group of people who's peaceful. They don't know what to do with peaceful civil disobedience and that sort of thing. They are not prepared for it, and they can't handle it. So that's why we need to remain peaceful, because if you remain peaceful in the face of violent people, then at the very least, people who are somewhat sane will be able to see who the truly violent people are. Not always, like in my case, they weren't able to see it, but they're more likely to see it if you aren't also being violent.
Yep. I don't know. I just think it's a bad idea. Well, going on, something related to the story we were talking about last, how that woman was saying
the AI
we don't have
girlfriends?
Enough. Yeah, the lady that was talking about AI girlfriends, she said AI girlfriends are a problem because, well, we don't have enough babies to pay for the future people on Medicare.
I want to put that on a T-shirt. Tax the babies.
Tax babies. This story is about food stamps program. The food stamps program in the United States is losing $1 billion every month to alleged fraud and errors. From Senator Ernst. This is from ZeroHedge.com by Tyler Durden. It says the lawmaker, apparently Senator Ernst. It's not Ernest, there's only one E.
Hmm.
The lawmaker issued the warning in a September 26 press release announcing new legislation aimed at combating the alleged billions of dollars in monthly losses from the United States Department of Agriculture's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, which allows low-income families with benefit cards to buy basic food items at approved grocery stores. Known as the SNAPback Inaccurate SNAP Payments Act, that's what he called it, the legislation would slash spending by nearly $1 billion a month by ensuring all errors, regardless of the amount, be counted. But let's go to the phones. We have David in New Mexico. What's on your mind, David?
I was going to say, first of all, I have pretty good luck with cops with the techniques that I use on them.
What kinds?
I know the law better than they do, and I know that their job kind of sucks in a lot of different ways, and so I empathize with them, and I tell them, I tell them what the law is, and I tell you, and I just flowcharted, if you do this, and I'm going to do this, and this is going to happen, so don't do this, knock this off, this is what I need you to do, basically, like, well, you're in a military family, I basically act like I'm one rank above them, and I'm their commanding officer, and I tell them what's up, and
they're kind of programmed to respond to that, aren't they, so.
What?
And you're saying that works?
Works for me, but I'm me. When I'm face to face with them, they can see they're dealing with somebody who's not taking any S, and that I know what I'm talking about, and that I will meet them in court if they really go beyond what they're lawfully allowed to do, and it never really gets that far because they see my demeanor, and they don't aside from the ones that are total butt clowns, I'd use the A word, but. Aside from those there's not much hope for them until they really get their fingers caught in the cookie jar. Aside from those guys, the total clowns, the other ones you can pretty much, I can pretty much use that technique with and they just, do only what they absolutely have to do. And then see you later.
Well, sorry, I kind of misspoke, but what I was saying was they're kind of programmed to respond to that. It would make sense because they're, you know, they're trained, you know, hierarchy. I'm above you, you listen to me, do everything I say, you don't question it, blah, blah, blah. So if you just start talking to them like that, you might be able to enter into their programming.
Yeah, could very well be. But what I really wanted to say was I don't hear in your discussion of, like, say, you know, bad policing or whatever it is, that's the symptom. The real problem is that what you call your government is actually not even a legal government according to the founding documents of the country. So if, as much as you don't like the highest law of the land, the laws of the land, if those were actually followed, you wouldn't have policing that you're, as you complain about it, because the government that has set up that policing wouldn't exist, because they shouldn't exist, because they're completely illegal, because they don't follow the law.
Well, what do you expect to do about them not following the law? Like, just force them to start following the law?
Well, if every single person out there would get up their dander and act as much as they can, I know it's not in everybody's makeup to do this, but to tell every person that oppresses them that comes along, you know, usually in the government or a governmental partner, exactly what's up. You know, here's what's up. Here's what you're doing. Here's what I'm not going to do. Here's what's going to happen if you continue down this track. So, you know, go ahead, try us. If everybody would do that, it would start to correct.
Well, you don't need everybody. I'll tell you this. I mean, I like where you're coming from on that, David, but all you really need is probably 5%, or maybe if you can get 10%,
yeah,
that'd be 10% would be amazing. 5% would be enough. If you could have, like, for instance, Bonnie recently, I mentioned earlier, she took a parking ticket to court. You know, if you had 5% of people with parking tickets taking them to court, they'd have to drop every single one of them. They wouldn't have time to prosecute all of that. If you had 5% of people taking all their speeding tickets,
You think it's that low that not even 5%
no
of people?
No way in hell.
Really?
No way.
Yeah.
It was probably not even 1%.
I mean, it took like an hour.
That, like, blows my mind.
And they paid that lady $25 to, and that's just one person, but that they're paying to prosecute me to get $15 out of me, $25 an hour. It doesn't monetarily make sense.
Wow, that just really blows my mind, because even, like, from, like, my kind of, like, normie status family, they were like, oh, yeah, you always fight speeding tickets, because the worst thing that they can say, oh, yeah, absolutely, but, like, the worst thing that you can say, they can say is no and whatever, but you might as well try because you don't want, you know, so I'm just surprised that more people don't.
With the exception of if they hit you with court costs and money is an issue to you and you end up with the speeding ticket plus a $70 court fee or a $100 court fee or whatever.
Well, the good news is in New Hampshire, there are no, officially there are no court costs. They do have what they call the penalty assessment, where they will hit you with a 24% tax, essentially, on anything that you are found guilty, and you have to pay a fine. There's usually a 24%. So I guess you could call that the court costs. But in some states, you actually have to pay like $200 just to take something to trial, whether you win or you lose.
That's so weird.
And so that's more of what I would consider to be a court cost situation, at least here in New Hampshire. And I don't think the penalty assessment applies to everything, because whenever I've been convicted of like a parking ticket, it's still just the $10 ticket or whatever it was. There's not like a 24%. It's not $12.40 or whatever. You know, I think it just depends. If you have a place like New Hampshire where you've got a potential for this, then, you know, that's a good thing, because we've actually got liberty-minded people coming here who are more likely to do this stuff. But even among our community, Nikki, it is still not particularly common. There are not a lot of free staters. Like, when's the last time you heard about a free stater taking anything to court in Manchester?
I haven't, but I don't know. I just don't. I'm also don't.
They apparently have a lot more free staters there, supposedly.
They have a lot more free staters there. You know, if there's 200 people living in Manchester, somebody's got a parking ticket.
Yeah.
Somebody within the last 6 months has gotten a parking ticket in the city of Manchester just by raw numbers. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. I don't recall anybody ever announcing any kind of parking ticket trial in Manchester, in my recollection.
Well, they might have done it, but they might just not have, like, publicly...
Well,
you know.
Now that could be true. In fact, there was a guy, Mo, who mm-hmm. changed his name to Mary Smith recently, but he came to one of our social Sundays a few weeks back, and he was telling us about something that he did take to court in Manchester. Yeah. And my response to him was like, well, why didn't you... Wait, you didn't record this?
And it was, like, a lot of funny stuff happened because they didn't believe him
crazy.
That he was Mary
yeah.
Smith.
Yeah, he told me that story. And essentially they were trying to say, the judge was trying to say, you're not Mary Smith. And he's like, no, literally, like, I am.
Yeah, that's
my name.
It's like, wait, you didn't get this on video? No, I didn't. Why didn't you ask us to come and record?
Yeah.
We would have come
and
recorded.
He didn't think about it.
I would have driven out to Manchester. But, he didn't think about it because it's not in the sort of the zeitgeist or whatever right now for even the activist community to be doing this.
Yeah.
And he's unusual in that he even bothered to take it to trial. So, like, he got that part right, but he didn't get the part right about actually promoting it and letting other people come out and support him. Like, we would have driven an hour plus from Keene to come out to support him on this. Like, next time, let us know. We'll come out. We'll record it. We'll handle all that stuff. You just do your thing. And I said, like, look, if you do this, then it encourages other people to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then if more people do it, then maybe we'll get closer to what David's talking about here, where more people are willing to throw a wrench into the system by simply standing up for their rights. But it's never going to be everyone.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. But 5%, I would be really impressed with.
Well, thank you for the call, David. I just think anytime you start saying, oh, if everybody did X, and I've definitely done it before myself, too. Sometimes I get frustrated, like, why can't people just see this? If everybody does X, then things would be better. But, I mean, one way that they, quote-unquote, they, the government and they, control people is just by making it, well, you got to put all your energy into living every single day, into surviving, so people aren't thinking about these things that seem pretty obvious to us.
Well, and most people don't want to spend the morning going to court. They would much rather cut a check and pay the speeding ticket or pay the parking ticket and just, you know, be done with it. It's a huge hassle. I mean, for you, Bonnie, it was stressful. You were stressed out with, like, okay, do I have all my questions?
Yeah, like, the night before, I had my friend kind of training me, not giving financial advice. I mean, not giving legal advice, though. And it was like a homework assignment. Like, the next morning, I was like, okay, am I going
to
pass?
You had to be prepared.
Yeah.
You did happen to win, but, you know, it wasn't because you put no time into it.
I forgot how based I am.
But this could be something that could get easier if more people are doing it. They could contribute to, like, I gave you a bunch of questions in advance that I had
used.
Yeah,
and that's the other thing. Like, if I had just randomly decided to do this myself and I didn't know Ian Freeman, it would have been a lot harder. Like, I don't really know what to do next. How do you even learn that stuff? But my husband is a genius. Sorry, Ian.
You know, I had a lot of help, and there's a lot of time and effort that's been put into this. But, yes, you can build off of what other people have already done.
Well, what do you think? 603-283-6160. More coming up.
Donald Trump warned America. The U.S. dollar is under attack, and it's becoming less and less valuable by the day. Hyperinflation and speculation is killing your retirement. Don't leave your money sitting in cash. It's time you diversified and protected your future with physical precious metals. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and get your free digital dollar survival kit and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver today. Call Advantage Gold now at 800-900-8000 to get your free digital dollar survival kit. And you may qualify for $1,000 in free silver. Advantage Gold is the number one rated gold and silver company in America. Your future is precious. Protect it today when you call Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000 now.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
That's 800-900-8000.
USA News Update. Illegal immigration is surging to unprecedented levels. Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz
says the president, vice president, and other top Democrats are turning a blind eye to the issue they have played a role in creating.
Where's AOC? I assume she still has her white pantsuit. She just can't be bothered to cry in front of the Biden cages, because with Trump no longer in the White House, suddenly the suffering of those kids doesn't matter.
Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey, along with his wife, entered a plea of not guilty to charges of bribery. According to federal prosecutors, the Democrat and his spouse are accused of receiving substantial sums of money, gold bars, and gifts in return for leveraging his influence to aid both businessmen and the Egyptian government. With the Hollywood writers' strike ended, late-night talk shows are gearing up for their return. Looks like they're scheduled to resume airing on Monday. Dave Collins, USA News.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good, they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Last about 30 minutes to get your calls in. 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
Nikki.
And it's Ian.
And just finishing up this story here, we have been talking about SNAP.
I think we barely even started it.
Well, yeah. The SNAP, which is the United States Department of Agriculture's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Welfare.
Yeah, well, it's welfare for people who need food.
EBT.
And it describes it as
well,
only
it's different
basic
than that somehow, isn't it?
Is it? It might be. I don't know anything
well,
about
it. Me either.
It is because it describes it as basic food items. But
okay. It's like SNAP benefits. I've heard of this before. Mm-hmm. I think it's similar to
EBT stand for anyway? Electronic benefit transfer. Okay.
So it's just a card.
SNAP benefits are provided through an EBT card.
I thought they were somehow connected.
But they're different. Because you can get like benefits for being disabled and you can have an EBT card.
So EBT is the card and then SNAP gets put through it, but you're saying other things can get put through it? Okay.
So what's weird about it is it describes it as basic food items, but I always see people complaining that like stupid things are allowed to be bought through it, because it's like some things are like way expensive, like luxuries that aren't just a basic food item.
Well,
some things are
I'm pretty sure
cigarettes.
As long as, like, if you go to the grocery store and most grocery stores accept EBT cards and other sort of government benefits, whatever, I'm pretty sure you can buy whatever you want with them.
I think there's restrictions.
There's restrictions, but I don't think that there are, like, a lot of people complain about them. I don't really know the details.
I don't know. I've seen people buy, like, crazy stuff.
And
then, like, some
complain
of them,
about.
And, like, you will see in the grocery stores, like, some items will have that tag, like, SNAP. Mm-hmm. And it'll say, or certain gas stations will say EBT accepted here. I was under the impression as long as, like, the store accepted it, you could essentially buy whatever you wanted with your EBT card.
Okay, so I think it's true as far as, like, they're not going to stop you from buying, you know, filet mignon. You should be able to buy that. But according to WAMU.org, in an article about SNAP WIC EBT, apparently WIC is the
women, infants, children. Yeah.
What are the differences? It says households. So SNAP is what used to be called food stamps back in the day.
Yep.
They renamed
they renamed
food stamps to SNAP. Households can use these food stamps to buy all food intended to be eaten at home. This includes the four staple food categories, as well as non-alcoholic beverages, snack foods, soft drinks, candy, and ice. So
that's like everything.
Okay, so not
cigarettes. You can buy a bunch of junk. But
you can't buy cigarettes or, like, alcohol.
Yeah, you cannot buy cigarettes and alcohol, hot foods. You cannot buy vitamins or medicines, pet foods, or items such as tissues, cosmetics, or soaps.
Yeah.
That's what it says here.
But that's, like, still a lot of stuff. I mean, you can
buy a lot
of candy, you know, and feed your kids that.
Yep. Well, apparently they're losing $1 billion a month. Wait, is it $1 billion a year? They're losing a billion dollars every month.
Okay.
To alleged fraud and errors. So this legislator, Senator Ernst, put in a bill called the Snapback Inaccurate SNAP Payments Act. And the legislation would slash spending by nearly $1 billion a month by ensuring all errors, regardless of the amount, be counted. The bill also directs state governments to stop handing out benefits.
Ensuring all errors?
Ensuring, with an E.
Ensuring, okay.
All errors, regardless of the amount, be counted.
I don't understand what that means.
I don't really understand it either. They need to be counted, like, maybe as errors.
Yeah, I don't know.
How do you know
it's
an error if it's a mistake? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know how this is going to do anything about the fraud that's going on out
there. Well, that's what it's getting into. It says, the bill also directs state governments to stop handing out benefits to individuals who are not eligible.
Mm.
Requires states to pay back what they owe, and directs states to recollect SNAP overpayments, ensuring that each household only receives exactly what they are eligible for.
Yeah, and I've heard of a lot of people who, like, are on this sort of thing. They will get extra money sometimes, or they'll, like, accidentally, or a lot of people during COVID were applying for unemployment and all of these benefits without actually qualifying for them. And the Social Security or whatever office takes care of this, they were so overwhelmed that they were just, like, approving everybody. They weren't even really, like, looking into who was applying. They're just approving everybody. And then a lot of people didn't actually qualify. And I did hear of some people who were scamming the system, so to speak, and they had to pay money back. So
to me, this sounds like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, $1 billion a month for the federal government isn't a whole lot of money, all things considered. And, you know, this guy isn't proposing an abolishment of welfare. So, like, whoopee-doo. He's going to pass some bill that he thinks is going to do something about this. I mean, I don't know if I believe it's going to. And you probably won't know for years anyway before they can come up with new statistics. And then they'll throw up their hands and they'll be shocked by some other ridiculous thing. I don't know. It's hard to really care.
The last thing. Additionally, the legislation will hold states accountable for payment error rates to incentivize better management of funds and improve the accuracy of SNAP payment error rates by requiring all errors be reported. So it's kind of weird. Like, how are they not getting reported?
It's bureaucracy. I mean, there's all kinds of things that'll probably fall through the cracks with bureaucrats. And there's not going to be any kind of punishment for anybody who doesn't report the things. It's just, well, you guys have been doing this wrong for the last 50 years, so now we're going to make it so you have to pay us back. I mean, whoopee-doo.
Hmm. says the number of Americans enrolled in the SNAP program increased from 35.7 million in 2019 to 41.2 million in 2022. So, like,
not
way
surprised.
After
COVID.
That's a big increase.
People can't afford to eat. Like, a lot of these people.
It's going
to
get worse, too.
Like, legitimately, they are. People complain about welfare all the time. I think a lot of people that are on welfare genuinely couldn't afford groceries without it. Are they working? Maybe. Maybe they have a minimum wage job. Maybe they're not working.
I think you
maybe
can't work to a certain point or else they'll cut you off of welfare.
Yeah, that like, but I think EBT is different. Like, I think if you have a bunch of kids and you have like a full-time minimum wage job, or maybe you're making like $20 an hour or something
they'll
like
give
that.
It to you.
Yeah, I think you can still qualify as long as you apply for it. Mm. As far as like unemployment and disability and stuff like that goes, it would definitely get slashed if you were actually working. But I know a lot of people that work and get EBT and different SNAP benefits, but I think if you don't work, you get a lot more. So you just have to, like, make up some disability. I get headaches, I can't work, whatever, and then collect money and then sell crack on the side or whatever.
Well, it says, meanwhile, SNAP costs rose from $60.3 billion in 2019, the last year before the COVID-19 pandemic, to a record-setting $119 billion in 2022. It's just like those numbers are so high, it almost isn't shocking.
Inflation is a thing, and so if you got... I don't know what they tend to give these households, but if you got $100 a week before 2020, that $100 a week probably isn't buying what, you know, $200 is buying now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they're going to have to increase the benefits going out to the SNAP people in order to get the same amount of groceries that they were getting before. I'm not saying they should. I'm not saying these things should exist. I'm just telling you that's what's likely going to happen. You know, they can do all the cleanup that they want. They can trim a billion here or make the states pay half a billion here or there or whatever. But ultimately, they're going to, if their intention is to pay for people's meals, they're going to have to pay more for those meals because the prices have gone up. And that means the productive people are going to be paying more. It means you're going to be working. If you're a productive person, you're working to pay for people who will not work and who refuse to work.
Yeah, getting rid of this program would be the best way to help taxpayers. And this woman, it's like her name's Joni Ernst, she's like going off, like making herself sound like some kind of a savior of taxpayers when she could be doing a lot more
if
she's got rid of this program. Yeah.
Okay.
She says families across the country are going hungry while bureaucrats are jumping in the line to gobble up SNAP dollars, either as a meal ticket to beef up state budgets or as a self-serve buffet of benefits for themselves or others who do not qualify.
Oh, okay. So I didn't really like understand exactly what they were talking about by like errors and people abusing the system, but
so she's saying it's people within the system abusing the system. I'm shocked to find out there's malfeasance within the government.
But you know, people never think of the solution as get rid of the system that allows people to do the thing that's wrong. They're just like, we can fix the system.
Yeah, just more reforms.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like we're just putting like a band-aid on a hemorrhage,
and she's
like, that's not helping.
She's using this to make herself sound like a badass politician who's here to help you. Yeah, I'm snapping back, she says. It's time for states at fault to pay the piper and eat the cost of their taxpayer waste. See, I hate those terms that you ever hear politicians use.
The tough talk or whatever.
She says, instead of over-serving bureaucrats, let's end the waste and set a place at the table for hungry families.
Yeah, let's help. That's what government is here for, is to help people, right?
Yeah. Well, that's basically it.
No, the government is not here to help people. The government is here to enrich themselves at the cost of the productive and use the money that they steal from you and I to benefit their buddies. And they give out welfare to get people's allegiance. They want millions of people to be on the government dole, so they will always vote for the government. They will always vote for more state, more welfare, more government programs, more cradle to grave being taken care of. And that is not what that's not how you create a healthy, vibrant economy with innovation and, you know, creation of new products and things.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Well,
you get losers that way.
Well, you get dependents that way, and that's what they want. They want people to be dependent on the system. And it's like, why would you care about the injustices that are going on when you get everything for free? know, I love the government. I get everything for free. Mm-hmm. I don't even have to, you know, I have a, you know, BMW, brand new flat screen TV, free groceries. I don't have to work. Why wouldn't those people love the state?
Yeah. And those have people get on juries and they're like, well, this guy doesn't want to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. Well, then F him. I just want to, you know, I like the government. I like what they do for me. He should pay taxes, too. I'm paying taxes, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'd like to see into the average welfare home and see how many televisions they have. I bet you they got more than one big flat screen television,
absolutely,
one in every kid's room. You know, kids have cell phones.
So real quick, my friend was living in low-income housing in the projects, and she told me I think it was during COVID, so it was, like, the day after everybody got their, like, all of the families, you know, how they were getting extra money. Like, everybody was getting the $700 or however much it was.
Mm-hmm.
But the families were getting more. So she was telling me that on the day after, like, the families got their check, people were coming in, like, with a bunch of Walmart bags. Like, people were coming in with brand new flat screen TVs.
Sure.
Like, and it was, so she was, like, literally all day, her thing that she was doing to entertain herself was looking out her window and watching her neighbors that were living in, you know, government Section 8 housing, watching them drag in all these expensive, like, flat screen TVs, whatever. Yeah. And, you know, when I would go to visit her at her house when she was living there, there'd be BMWs. Like, there was some nice car. Like, not all of the cars there were nice. Like,
sure,
there were some normal cars. But it's like, typically, if you're driving a Beamer, like, why are
you're
you living
right
in the projects?
Yep.
Yeah, you know, it's like, okay.
Super weird. Well, Ian had a story about near-death experiences.
Well, at least one near-death experience from a man who previously had described himself as an atheist. The story from the Jerusalem Post at jpost.com. There are many unanswered questions in life, the essence of life, existence beyond our planet, and what lies ahead after death. These mysteries have perplexed brilliant minds worldwide with divergent beliefs about the afterlife. While some strongly believe in heaven and hell or reincarnation, others deny the existence of an afterlife, proclaiming that we simply cease to exist. However, one man's encounter during a near-death experience has challenged this disbelief. Jose Hernandez, at the time an avowed atheist, has shared how a life-altering incident transformed his perspective. Speaking to the YouTube channel Shaman Oaks, Hernandez recounts his extraordinary journey that began with a routine work assignment as an engineer. His near-death experience occurred while fixing an electrical issue from atop a bucket truck. He says, I was a staunch atheist. As an engineer, I focused solely on logical explanations. But that day, everything changed. We were running late, and my partner, concerned for my safety, inadvertently crashed our truck into a tree.
With concern for his safety?
Right.
What?
Yeah, that's kind of confusing.
The impact left me with multiple broken ribs, and I was rushed to the emergency room.
Oh, I thought it was going to have something to do with getting electrocuted, but...
At the hospital, Hernandez's breathing ceased, and medical staff fought desperately to save his life. In that critical moment, he found himself contemplating God and making a promise, if you get me through this, I'll change, he said. It was then that he noticed a mysterious presence in the room. He says, I saw a shadow standing by the door. At that point, I thought, I've endured so much in life, perhaps it's fine to let go.
Wow.
And the moment the shadow touched my toe, an overwhelming sense of relief, calm, peace, and love engulfed me. It was euphoric, he said. As medical professionals performed CPR on him, Hernandez claims the shadow spoke to him. He said, next, I found myself suspended in the corner of the room, observing the resuscitation efforts. A voice beside me said, think of your body as a car. This vehicle has traveled 8 million miles, and there's nothing more we can fix. It's time to bid farewell to your body. The voice instructed me, okay, it's time to move on.
Weird. Why'd he come back then?
Following this, Hernandez describes a descent into a black hole where he experienced flying and witnessed mesmerizing cities, breathtaking forests, and wild herds of animals in motion. In this celestial realm, he was assured that he would be able to see his children, and most significantly, he was reunited with his father. He said, when I met my father on the other side, I realized that sometimes we may be unable to express certain things here, but elsewhere we can, he said. Near-death experiences often share common elements, with many individuals reporting similar experiences during CPR. While some interpret these encounters as evidence of consciousness beyond the physical realm, medical professionals offer an alternative explanation. Emeritus Professor of Biochemistry William Revel, in an article in the Irish Times, argues that near-death experiences reflect brain activity during moments of oxygen deprivation.
It's so dumb because that has been disproven. And people just say it. Like, there's not, like, studies that disprove that. Because they talk about it, and if you read Dr. Melvin Morris's books, how they will do studies where they purposely deprive, like, the people's brains of oxygen, or study people whose brains are being deprived of oxygen, and it doesn't create these things. It'll create hallucinations, like, sometimes, like, oh, I see something in the room, it's not there. But it doesn't create these things that near-death experiences have specific elements to them.
Not all of the people who have the experiences are being oxygen deprived either.
Yeah. Right. That's the other thing. It's just so dumb. Like, doctors will just say that, so that way somebody reading this article will be like, okay, no, I have an explanation, so I can move on and go
Well, isn't continue. There still brain activity after people are dead? I don't know if it has anything to do with oxygen, but...
Yeah, after people die, their brain's still lighting up in certain ways. Apparently, I've heard that before, but maybe not everyone? I don't know.
He suggests the reports of a light at the end of a tunnel may be the result of falling oxygen levels in the retina, creating tunnel vision. In Jose Hernandez's case, his near-death experience challenged his atheism and opened his eyes to the possibility of an afterlife. I feel like we got not the whole story here. Like, you know, like he said, or like you said, Bonnie, why did he end up coming back?
If the spirit was telling him, all right, it's time to die.
Yeah, already crossed over. Obviously, this is not a particularly detailed retelling here, but apparently the full story is available on this YouTube channel, which is called Shaman Oaks.
It got me thinking.
Shaman Oaks.
Since that story's like over, right, and we're not going to listen to the YouTube channel or video. Well, it just got me thinking, because the last story I was thinking, like, what causes someone to be someone who's just okay with being a welfare person and just, like, not accomplishing much in their life and sitting around watching a big screen TV from their Section 8 housing? And I was just sitting here thinking, like, it's not like when COVID-19 happened and I lost my job I didn't get fired, but all of a sudden I wasn't able to be a waitress and I could only basically pack food up for people who are coming to take it away, and I was making, like, no money. So I could have quit my job and then claimed it was because of COVID and just sat on the couch and got $600 a week or whatever it was. But it was just, like, that's against my nature. Mm-hmm. It's nothing. It wasn't even me being, like, I'm a libertarian. Like, I had spent years. I already knew what libertarianism was, but I already, like, spent years committed to... I'm just going to be a normie because there's basically nothing you can do about it. That's basically how I was living my life. It had nothing to do with, like, ideology. It's just, like, who I am as a person. I wouldn't feel good just sitting around collecting $600 a week doing nothing. Like, I wanted to go do Uber Eats, and I was making way more money doing that than I even was waitressing in good times because, like, people all of a sudden just wanted to sit at home and buy Uber Eats food. And so I was at least doing as good as the $600 a week people at the very beginning. And, I was just thinking, like, what's it that causes people to be different? Like,
I think it's taught. It's a taught behavior. Like, this is like a family disease.
You were raised right, basically. Yeah. You were raised by people who...
Okay, my sister's raised exactly like me is not like that.
You're one of your sisters, not
right.
the one that's
not
here
the
right
one,
now.
Not okay. all of them.
Right. Okay, well, that's a good question. Obviously, environment and...
Yeah, like nature versus nurture, right?
There's factors here. And maybe it is something that's inside of you, Bonnie. Maybe there is something that's natural to you that your sister doesn't have, despite the fact that you have the same parents. You've got some siblings, right, Nikki? What about your brother's sisters?
So my sisters are both also hardworking, and you know, my sister has even said before, like, the reason why she is so hardworking is because she watched my father run his own business and watched my mother work full-time while taking care of kids. And I also have a very strong work ethic. You know, I usually have multiple jobs. And my other sister as well. So for us, at least, like, we kind of attributed that towards, like, the way we were raised and, like, watching our parents. Maybe if I had more siblings, like Bonnie has a lot more siblings than I do. Maybe if I had more siblings, you know, we'd have at least one or two that were like, you know, a loser or whatever. But
yeah, I mean, I had a good upbringing as well. You know, my parents were also entrepreneurial people, and I was raised where I went to work with my mom and, you know, worked from a very young age. So I've always had a good work ethic, and I've never considered just sitting around. Like, I've got to have things to do.
Yeah.
Like, how boring, right? Yeah. Like, I
get
imagine.
So bored, that for one thing. Another thing I think it is, it's just I've always had this, like, feeling like I just have something I got to do. Like, I have something I have to do for, like, first of all, I've always believed in a higher power. And second of all, I've always believed in, like, basically this, like, fight going on. Like, there, I don't want evil to win. And I don't know what it is. I just feel like that. It's not necessarily that it's, I think I'm going to get something done by working Uber Eats. I don't know how to explain it. I just think that if I'm just sitting at home, just doing things all for my own pleasure all day.
Well, they say idle hands do the devil's work.
It would just, you know, I wouldn't ever get put in the right position to end up doing good things or, I don't know. I just think that people like that have such boring outlooks. Like, all there is for me and this planet is to sit around watching
TV. And get the next check.
Yeah, free ride. Yeah, I don't know. Like, for me, like, a lot of my work, I actually genuinely enjoy. So, like, I'm not only, like, just doing this for money. Like,
that's part of it. Some people probably have jobs that they hate.
Yeah.
So, like, to them, being able to pay, getting paid to stay home is, like, a relief.
It's better, yeah.
Or something like that. But still, they don't have that drive to go out and do something better. Because if you work at a job that you hate, well, there was a time within the last couple of years where you could literally walk away from your job and go get any other job that you wanted to. Now, that's not as easy now, as I understand it. Some businesses are actually cutting jobs rather than hiring. But, you know, 2 years ago, you could literally throw a stone and hit every business, and they were all hiring.
Well,
so
I just got to bring it up because it's been studied, and a lot of people studying it have come to the conclusion that people who have near-death experiences, they go from, oh, the material realm is the only thing. Like this man said, he used to feel that way, and now he doesn't. He thinks that there's more to life than just that.
Yeah.
And I just think that if more people had those beliefs, that less people would just be sitting around in their Section 8 housing, watching their big screen TVs, and thinking there's nothing else to life. That's all.
Yeah, I'll share the link to this, the actual interview with this guy, at social.freetalklive.com. Just follow the @FTL account there.
Well, this has been Free Talk Live. We'll see you again tomorrow. Peace.
Former CIA officer and survival expert Jason Hansen here. I teach people how to prepare for the unexpected. Right now, most Americans are not ready for the death of the U.S. dollar. You have money sitting in cash, and if you don't act soon, your financial future could be at risk. I have partnered with Advantage Gold, the number one rated precious metals company in America, to release my new digital dollar survival kit that's 100% free for everyone who calls today and claims your free survival kit. Simply call 800-900-8000 and give your email address, and I will have this new digital dollar survival kit sent to you immediately. Call 1-800-900-8000 now and claim your free kit, and also mention my name, Jason Hansen, and see how you could also qualify for $1,000 in free silver. Supplies are limited, so call right now before it's too late. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendovite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendovite was just what I needed to keep me healthy. And Extendovite is all natural. Extendovite was designed for the heart, but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendovite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.